We are still finishing these two psukim from yesterday, from last week's pasuk, Dalid, and Hey. Okay, we pretty much finished. Well, not totally. We were in the middle of doing a little bit of the Malbim. Okay, we were in the middle. We ran through it a little bit. I want to go through it again a little slower. Okay, so let's go through the Malbim again one more time very quickly. We're not going to start from the beginning. We'll start from page 499. That's where we were in the middle of doing last week. On page 499, the Malbim, the top of the page, of the Inyan Hashiva Royim, Ushmoina Nesichim. Okay, so we were in the middle of discussing this. It says over here in the Pasuk, on page 498, Hashem says, I'm going to establish a love, seven shepherds, and eight leaders of man. We discussed this already, you know, here and there. Let's jump right now into the middle of the Malbim. The Malbim says, "Hashiva royim u'shmoyin nesichim kvar yesh perushim rabim mafarshim." There are many interpretations. V'yesh lefarish oid sheramas alzman hakoidem. Now he's giving interpretation. Now he's telling us how many kings are left. This is the last thing we said on Friday. How many kings are going to be left from the time of the beginning of the galus of the Aseres Hashvatim until the Churban Beis Hamikdash? In the Malchus of Yisrael, there are seven kings. He's enumerating seven kings that shepherd the Jewish people, the Malchus of Yisrael, through the conclusion of the Golos. And then after, all that was left in Eretz Yisrael was the Malchus of Yehuda, and there were eight kings from the time of the end of the Golos of Yisrael until the Churban Beis Hamikdash. And he actually lists them for us. V'yesh lefar v'shoyt sh'ramaz alzman ha'koidem sh'me'eshe heichel ha'oyev lekatzois b'Yisrael. From when the enemy began to cut off the Jewish people, referring over here to the golos of the Aseres HaShvatim, specifically the nation of Ashur, she'zehoyev b'mei Yehoy Ochoz ben Yehu. This began in the Malchus of Yehoy Ochoz ben Yehu, ad sh'bamelech Ashur v'higlom, until Melech Ashur came and exiled them entirely. The last of the Jewish kings of the Malchus of Yisrael was Hoshea. Hayushmoina Nisichim. There was eight leaders. Now he explains to return to Leimar. Melachim Laseres Hashvatim. Who are the kings? Who are the Melachim Laseres Hashvatim? Him Yehoy Ochos, Yoyosh, Benoi, his son, Yeravam Benoi, Zecharia Beno, Menachem, Pekachia, Pekach, Hoshea, Heim, Shmoina. Oh, well, you look in the back on page 915, you'll see there were nine. There it lists Shalom. No, Shalom does not count because he did not serve in any leadership role. He was just a figurehead for a very short time. Ki Shalom Nerag, Tekef Ve'enem, and Achezhman. So there were eight kings that led the Aseres Hashvatim in the Malchus of Yisrael from the time when their enemies began to exile them. And the Malbim says this includes not just Melech Ashur, it includes a period of time before Melech Ashur where also they were subjugated to harassment and exile. Okay, we have to really go back and study our Jewish history and study Tanakh very carefully to understand exactly what happened during that time. But in addition to the three waves of exile that occurred through the king of Ashur, there was a period of time before that where also the Jews began to be exiled, and all of this took place in a span of time when over eight kings. And that's what it means over here in this pasuk, Ushmoina Nisichei Adam, leaders of man. The Acharzeh, afterwards, Hayu Shiva Royim Beis Yehuda. Who were they? After this point on, then after the Golos of the Aseres Hashvatim, who was left in Klal Yisrael, the Malchus of Yehuda in Yerushalayim, which mainly was comprised of Yehuda and Binyamin. But Chazal tell us there were small pockets of members of the other Aseres Hashvatim. There were some refugees who did seek refuge with Yehud and Binyamin, and lead how many kings were there until the Golas of Tzidkiyahu? 7. They are Yechizkiah, Menasha, Amon, Yehoahaz, Yehoyakim, Yechonya, and Tzidkiyah. So that is the same. So notice interesting over here that we now have a little bit of an appreciation of the terms. Why is there Shiva shepherds, Royim, and 8 Nisichei Adam? So we get a little bit of appreciation that the Malchus of Yehuda, which was legitimate, 100%, those kings are called shepherds. Whereas the kings of Yisrael, the 8 kings, they're called Nisichei Adam. They're called leaders of man, which would seem to indicate that it's a lower level. When we learned this, we discussed this last week, some of the Mefarshim seem to say the opposite, is that the Shiva Royim is a lower level. If you call me a shepherd is someone who takes care of animals. And Nesichi Adam sounds much more significant, sounds like you're a leader of man. It means
said
you're
all the great leaders before him, the Avos and things that are all wrong.
Shepherds,
Moshe,
right.
Rabbeinu and all of those. So that's the, I would think that that's what we're talking about.
So you, there are different ways of looking at it. But it's clear that according to the Malbim, what he's suggesting is that the shepherds are the Malchus of Yehuda, which is more Choshev, and the Nesichi Adam are the leaders of Yisrael, which are less Choshev.
The Torah tells us that Moshe Hayor Roeh,
Moshe was a shepherd.
So it's telling us that to give us a thought, and we know why. I mean, it gives them time to think about life.
It's a job which, right, you have the ability to think, right, exactly, you just said it, to think. You have time to think. Most jobs, you don't have time to think. You said that's why we said this joke many times. Why are Jews so successful in business? Especially Orthodox Jews, because 3 times a day they have time to think about business.
You're thinking about the
Tfilis,
if you say it, makes you...
Come
Davin
Minchat, you know.
That's the importance of knowing Perish Amilos. That's what makes you think, really.
You know, if you're really thinking about it, it's interesting, you know, people, I remember when I went to Shia, I used to go to certain Shiurim when I was, I had no choice, when I was in Beis Medrash, and I honestly did not understand one word that the Rebbe said, not a word. And I had no choice, you know, you have to go to the Shia. So I go to the Shia, and then finally, I no longer have to go to the Shia. So I always used to ask myself, am I better off now? And I always felt is that during that time I went to the Shia, I didn't listen because I didn't understand a word that was being said. I would just think. I would think about life. I would plan. I would plan accordingly. You know, what am I going to do here, this, that. And then when I no longer went to Shia, I never had time to think. I never really had significant, and always it was. I found it to be very interesting. Is this a very great advantage having time in the day to think? And if you're a shepherd, it appears to be a pretty boring job. But it's exactly what Chazal say that the shepherds they meditated. They had time to meditate about life. David, Moshe, Yaakov. Yosef, we think about the idea is that when you're a shepherd, so you learn how to take care of something.
Right.
That's also true. I mean, I am Panim LaTorah. But there's another element that a person is a shepherd, you're definitely presented with an opportunity to think. Chazal say that. Okay, let's go further. Gam yesh lefarish al le'osin. This is where we got up to. Also, this can refer to them that these shepherds, it's not these 7 and 8 are not referring over to today, it's referring to what's going to be in the future. Shakafin nevuas yecheskel sheni be al mulchem besod gemorik besimel lamed beis besimel lamed ches hinei lefi ma sheni be al mulchama besimel lamed beis sheash yovei oz al eretz yisrael ases mulchama in edoim kemo shepirash disham. There's going to be a war. Ashur is going to come on eretz yisrael to make war. Im Edoim, Kemo Shepirash Yisham. Everyone has their take as to what's going to happen in times of Mashiach. And the Malbim says that Eretz Yisrael is going to be the battlefield. The war is not going to be necessarily only against us. Yerushalayim is going to be the battlefield where the nations of the world will fight against one another.
Right.
And the truth is, this has happened already in history. This is the Crusades. The Crusades, what was the Crusades all about? It was they fought, the Muslims against the Christians. Where were the major battles? In Eretz Yisrael. They all marched. They marched in order to free the Holy Land from the infidels, from the Muslims. The Muslims, the Turks, they took control of Yerushalayim and parts of major chunks of Eretz Yisrael, other regions, other cities as well. But they went and they fought major battles in Eretz Yisrael. It was the battlefield. But wait a minute. The land doesn't belong to the Muslims and it doesn't belong to the Christians. It belongs to us. So what are they doing in this land? Well, that was the tragedy, that once we went into exile, there was a world war going on. Who is now the Yoresh? Is Edom the Yoresh? Is Yishmael the Yoresh? And the truth is, none of the above. We're the Yarshim. World wars are being fought, and we're not even considered to be relevant to the war. They're killing each other out, and it's our land. So that's the Malbim says that in L'Asa Lavo, this idea is going to repeat itself to a certain degree. There's going to be a war around Yerushalayim by, now he doesn't say Yishmael, he says Ashur and Edom. That's how we understand whatever all of this means. By Ashur and Edom, they're going to be fighting against each other, and the battlefield will be Yerushalayim. Excuse me. You want to fight? What do you go? Don't fight in our backyard. Go fight in your backyard.
That's why Abarbanel says the reason it will take place in Eretz Yisrael, which he says, like the Malbim comes with, so that the Jews could witness their destruction.
Oh, okay. So they have any interpretations?
Right.
But that Kamosha Pirashim. That again, that's only his take. Obviously, there are many dimensions as to what exactly will happen. Now, here is the point we want to go make. Yovohu Oz Shivaroyim. It's an incredible idea, an incredible novel idea, what he's about to present. When this battle will occur between Ashur and Edom, there will be seven shepherds that will come to watch and participate. Who are the shepherds? The other major nations of the world. And he lists them. It's amazing. Oz Shom Yavo Oz Shivaroyim Shehe Mitzrayim Elam. Elam is Iran. Okay, Meshech. Anyone want to guess what Meshech is? I have no idea. Meshech, Tuval, Edom, we think we know. Nisichei Tzafon, the leaders of the north. Who's that? North Korea? Kim? Tzidoni. Who is the Tzidoni? Who's the Tzidoni? Okay, Lebanon? Lebanon? Oh, no. Okay, I don't know. Okay, it could be. Okay, so they're going to be all the where's China? Who's China here? Meshech, Tuval? Who's China?
They're not mentioned.
It can't be. Who's
well,
India?
A country name to all the names in Noah. He gives a country.
And China, there's no...
represent Asia from this country, in his day, whatever the countries were.
But everybody has
time.
A different guess.
Right, yeah. I mean, but he,
and
he,
usually do it by
he
sound,
goes ahead and lists it nation by nation.
Okay, I have no idea. But anyway, over here he says, V'amulchamash nibi alecha b'simin lamin ches. Okay, so that's one battle. Okay, it's an incredible idea. There's going to be a battle between Ashur and Edom in Yerushalayim, and who's going to come to watch? Who's going to come to participate? It's not clear on whose side each one, which team you, what team are you on? Whose team are you on? But it says they're going to be Shivaroyim, and he lists the Shivaroyim. Now, there's another battle, and then that's going to be B'Simla Menches Yesh Shmoyna Nesichim. There's going to be another battle. Shribola B'Simla Menches Yesh Shmoyna Nesichim Behem Goik Nisi Eretz HaMogoik. There's Meshech, Tuval, Paras, Kush, Put, Goimer, Beis, Togarma. That notice there's an overlap. Okay, Tuval and Meshech, they come twice. Okay, so that's, first of all, that's very interesting because according to all of the interpretations that we've learned until now, there's no overlap between the seven and the eight. Everything that we've learned, we've gone through a whole number of collection of ideas last week of what is the seven and the eight. According to everything that we have discussed, there is no overlap between the seven and the eight. Everyone is independent. According to the Malbim, in this interpretation, there's overlap. There's seven and eight, And who appears twice?
In the Masur, you have the phrase Hakim
Lama. Oh, right. Hakim Lama, but only Roam Shiva. What
right.
happened to the eight?
No, all right. So he's oh. saying that the Roam is the Shiva.
Yeah. Hanukkah candles are the eight.
I understand.
What's going on over there? We'll come down a little bit in a moment. But over here, I just find this to be very interesting, because over here we do have, in this interpretation for the first time, something that we would not think, and that is overlap. And the overlap is only two nations, if I'm not mistaken, maybe I'm wrong, Meshech and Tuvol. Okay, Meshech and Tuvol are the only ones which appear twice. Vishambi Arati, Shepam Achas Yavo Al Haaretz V'lo Yikonis Al Yerushalayim V'yal Ze'omar Ki Yavo Bi'aretz Seinu U'pam Achas Yavo Ad Yerushalayim. They're going to come into Yerushalayim. So he comes to also answer the question we've been grappling with, and that is the repetition. Why does it say it twice? It says in Pasuk Dalid, we said Kiyava v'yartzeinu v'chi yidroich b'arminoyseinu, and then Pasuk He concludes Kiyava v'yartzeinu v'chi yidroich b'gvuleinu. Why the repetition? And according to the Malbim, we're discussing two different battles. We are discussing Yemos HaMashiach, Milchemes Gog U'Magog. Again, it's all very mysterious. I don't think most of us, when we hear about Milchemes Gog U'Magog, we don't talk about two battles. We talk mostly about one final battle. And we assume the battle is to destroy Eretz Yisrael, to destroy Klal Yisrael. But the Malbim's understanding of the word Necheskel is, no, there's not one battle. There are two battles. And the two battles, it's not necessarily about us. The battles are against themselves. The enemies of the world, these nations of the world, they have their own issues. And they're fighting against us. And for some reason, they're using Eretz Yisrael as an excuse to go to war against each other. That, in and of itself, is a very fascinating idea. We like to think we're very egocentric. We like to think everything is about us. Everyone hates us. Esav soneh Yaakov, halacha biyadua. It's all against us. The Malbim presents an idea that it's not necessarily all about us. The nations of the world hate each other. But it's not politically correct to hate your neighbor. It's not politically correct for there to be a war of one nation against another nation. But when you use Eretz Yisrael as an excuse, so you're just using Eretz Yisrael as an excuse to kill each other. Now you had that by, I was reading up lately recently about the Yom Kippur War. And you get a sense. The Yom Kippur War, the United States, Nixon was involved. No one's coming to deny the chesed, the incredible chesed the United States did with Eretz Yisrael to provide assistance and weapons, support, moral support, and money, weapons, v'chulu, v'chulu. But you cannot ignore the fact that Eretz Yisrael was just mainly an excuse for the United States to fight with Russia. The Cold War was at its height. The United States, Eretz Yisrael was just an excuse. The United States and Russia did not want to confront one another directly. If there would be an open confrontation, the world would come to an end. They would launch the nukes, and it's all over. So what did they do? They used Eretz Yisrael as a way to fight with each other. Each one supplied the enemy with weapons. Russia supplied Egypt and the Syrians with the best that they had to offer. And the United States supplied Israel with the best they had to offer. So really, what was the Yom Kippur War? In one perspective, it was a war of the United States against Russia. And they were just using Israel as the battleground.
Proxy war.
So we think, we're very egocentric. We think, oh no, that America, they love us, and they're coming, they're fighting Leman Hashem for the Jewish people. And Russia, they are Esav, they're Yishmol, all morphed into one, and they're fighting Mulchemes, they're Mulchem against the Ribbono Shel Olam. Guess what? It's true. Okay, I'm not coming to say that's not true. But there's another way of looking at it, which you cannot ignore, is that It has nothing to do with Ribbono Shel Olam. It has nothing to do with their love or hate for Klal Yisrael. They hate each other. They're jealous of each other. They're jealous of each other, trying to dominate the world. They're trying to dominate the world. It's all about money. They hate each other. And if they're going to confront each other directly, the world will come to an end. So instead of fighting a real war, they have a proxy war. They'll have like a video game. And the video game is being played in Eretz Yisrael. Each one supplies, they'll test out their weapons in Eretz Yisrael. Isn't that what happened? Isn't that really to a degree what the Malbim is saying? That La'asa Lavai, there's going to be two wars, and the wars are going to take place in Eretz Yisrael, and the wars really have nothing to do with us. The wars have to do with each other, and everyone is coming to lend support, and that's really what happened in the Yom Kippur War. Every nation in the world was on one side or the other. Okay, when the United States wanted to send weapons to Eretz Yisrael, they had to go fly in a zigzag to the planes because this country doesn't give air rights.
No,
you can't fly here, you can't fly there, you can't upset this one because everyone is on one team. So who's the war against? The United States against Russia. And Israel is just there as an excuse. Yeah.
Nixon was very, very anti-communist.
Exactly.
That's what you're saying.
Exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying.
And a lot of people feel that. I mean, again, you have to be grateful for
it's,
what he did.
Of course, not too long. We're very grateful. There's no question about it.
But he was very anti-communist.
But it's clear as day is that the reason why they were supportive of Israel to a very large degree was it was just basically a way to flex their muscles against Russia.
Also, I think this was true with the Crusades.
What do you mean?
The Christians against the
Muslims.
Yeah, against the Muslims.
Yeah, but we were irrelevant. There, the Jews were in Gaulus. The Jews had no control over Eretz Yisrael. There was 500 Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. It was nothing.
Yeah.
There, it was purely a war of the Muslims against the Christians. The Jews were really totally irrelevant.
But
it happened to be on much. The way they pillaged. They wanted money. It wasn't.
So,
yeah.
I'm saying we suffered very much from it, from the coup. We suffered terribly.
So very terribly. What was so sad about the Crusades is that our suffering, it wasn't necessarily focused on martyrdom. In other words, if the Goyim come, they launch a war against Hashem, and we give our lives l'shem Hashem, it's horrific. No one's coming to deny, but it's very glorious. It's very romantic. You see our love for Hashem. In the Crusades, 30,000 people at least, whatever it was, 10 to 30,000 were killed. They were killed, Al-Kiddush Hashem, only as an afterthought. That wasn't the primary goal. The primary goal was the Christians were fighting against the Muslims. Why? There's a lot of discussion why. But the task it wasn't to go wipe out the Jews. The Jews were considered irrelevant. It just happened to be that on the way to Eretz Yisrael, you have to march 3,000 miles to get there. Oh, we need parnasa, we need money, so we might as well have a good time and kill the Jews.
I think it was also, why are we fighting with the Muslims? Because they don't believe in Yashka. They said they didn't also don't believe in
exactly.
Yashka.
But that was an afterthought. You study the history, it appears that the horror of the... It was their main objective was to go to war against the Muslims. If the Muslims were not occupying Eretz Yisrael, would there have been a crusade against the Jews living in the Rhineland? Wanted to go to Spain. There are a lot of Jews living in Spain. Why only the Rhineland? No, it doesn't seem like they had an interest to commit genocide, to wipe out the Jews. They had an issue. They had an issue with the Christian, with the Muslims. There was jealousy. There was rivalry.
They took over Jerusalem.
They conquered territory that they previously had, and there's also rivalry between the Pope and Constantinople with the Protestants, there was...
Protestants later.
Sorry. There was a lot going on. There was a lot of, there were many, many issues.
Yeah.
But the extermination of the Jews was not the, at least does not appear to be their primary objective. Once already they were all rallied up and they were all in a frenzy, then the hatred, the hatred for the Jew, that came, that became unleashed. And it was horrific, and it was Kiddushim Shemayim. It turned into, there are a lot of things that happened. But that was not the primary objective. Unlike Hitler, Yimach Shemo V'Zichro, it was Melchama L'Hashem, it was Mamish Melchama L'Hashem. Okay, his primary objective, the Holocaust, in a certain way, was a much greater focus of a Melchama against Hashem. The Crusades was horrific, horrific tragedy. But was it directed? Did it start out directly against the Jews, at least from at face value? No, it doesn't seem so. In the Kindness, we really focus heavily, heavily, heavily on the Crusades. In that, because in that certain sense, it's even more tragic. Because if you're fighting against Hashem, you know, there is like, okay, you know, you're fighting against Hashem. This is Mashiach. But when Jews are just slaughtered, Klachar Yad, to a degree, there's even a greater degree of Hester upon it than when you're waging a war against the Ribbono Shel Olam. Waging a war against the Ribbono Shel Olam is Tanakh, is the whole story of the Jewish history. This is Melchemes Goyg u'Magog. When a Jew is just, you know, Klachar Yad, killed, it's a greater degree of Hester upon it. Because how could this be? A Jew just gets killed like that? We're not even the primary focus. It's very disturbing. That's why in Tisha B'Av, when we focus on Hester Panim, to a degree we focused on the Crusades because of this. Okay, there are many different dimensions to the Crusades. But over here an incredible insight from the Malbim. The Malbim, again, just to recap, this Yisoid of the Malbim, is telling us over here that they're referring over to the Nevuah Yecheskel, and everything over here is L'shitasoi. Then the time of the Mashiach, there's going to be two battles in Yerushalayim, and from his understanding, the battles do not necessarily have anything to do with Klal Yisrael. The nations of the world are at each other's throats, they hate each other, and they use Eretz Yisrael as an excuse, as a battleground, as a way to fight one another. And we have a very good example of that in modern times, the Yom Kippur War, where it was clearly, to a large degree, a war between the United States and Russia. Each superpower was providing one side, the United States provided weapons and money for Israel, whereas the Russia gave the best weapons to Egypt and Syria. And they were basically fighting each other out in this proxy war, using Israel as their battleground. That's very much what he's saying. And who's going to participate in these type of wars? So in one of these wars, it says there's going to be 7 participants. Other nations are going to come forward and also participate. And another war, there's going to be 8 participants. It's a very interesting approach. Very, very different than anything that we have seen here from the Mefarshim. Okay. Now, we cannot conclude without mentioning what everyone keeps on referring to again and again, this, when we say Hanukkah, our next festival in the Mosor. Oh, welcome back. I saw you became the abyss. We saw you with the chief rabbi, Lau. I saw such nice pictures and videos of you in his Dalet Amos. And we go to the story of Hanukkah. Hanukkah in the Moos, so what do we say?
Hanukkah.
Let me find the exact page. Okay, that line actually has been corrupted probably 100 times over by the censors. One of the most abused stanzas in Jewish liturgy is that line. Okay, Chanukah, Limei Chanukah, page 445. in the art school.
And then
they're
burned down. And then they're
burned down. 357. 357. Sorry. 357. Okay, so here we have the Mosor. And the very end of the Mosor, the last stanza. Okay, now these stanzas we assume refer to the Dal Malchias. This is the domain of Rav Michal. Dal Malchias, first we go beginning of time, we go to Bavel, Parasamodai, Yavan, Yavanim, Nikbitzur, Lachanik is the story of Yavan. And then we come to the last stanza. Chasoif.
Later on.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry? It was been added later on, right. It must have been added later on because Chanukah stops at Yavan. So then we come to the last stanza. Chasoif Zeroya Kachach. What does it mean? Chasoif means to reveal, to uncover. Uncover your mighty arm. Vikarev Kates HaYeshua. Bring near the end, the Kates, the end of days, which will bring with it salvation. Nikoim Nikmas Tama Vodecha. Exact revenge for the blood of your servants, all of those that have died, al-Kiddush Hashem, me'umah, now obviously this is something which has been manipulated, me'umah, horisha'ah, from the evil empire. Who is the evil empire referring to? We assume Rome. Ki orcholanu ha'yishu, it's been a long time. We've been waiting quite a long time for your salvation. V'ein keitz li'mei hora'ah, there's no end in sight. Does not seem that the evil, the harm, comes to an end. Seemingly endless. Dechei Admon. Shove them. Push them away. Admon is the red one. Edom, another term referring to Edom. Betzel Tzalmon. In the shadow of death. Okay, Tzalmon is a term. It's not so simple to translate the word. What does it mean exactly? Tzalmon? Tzalmon seemingly means Gehenim. It's a term. A term that refers to Gehenim. I'm not exactly sure of the etymology. Yeah.
Or the shadow of the cross.
The shadow of the cross. Why? What? How do you get that?
Salem.
Betzel the Chei Admon. Betzel in the shadow. Yeah, this is one of your big verlach, right? In the shadow of the Salem. Tzalmon. Play on the words of their cross. So in other words, they should do themselves in their own religion. Their own religion will lead them to implode. Okay, the principles of their religion are corrupt, and when they will follow the principles of their own religion, it will lead to their own destruction. They created for themselves a religion that is self-destructive. Right? Is that what you're saying? In the shadow,
ultimately,
they will implode if they are really. Would really follow the principles of their religion, they would disappear. They would kill. They would disappear because the ideology of their religion is fundamentally corrupt. Okay, Betzel Tzalmon. It's a very interesting approach to understanding how to do away with them. Hakeim Lanu, and then we conclude here. Establish for us Royim Shiva, seven shepherds. What are seven shepherds? What's going on over here? I thought it's Chanukah, there are eight. What is this all about? So you have to learn the Pasuk in Micha, like we learned today. In Micha, in Perek Hei, in Pasuk Dalet, you learn, V'hakeimoinu olav, shiva royim u'shmona nisichei adam. Now that begs the question. So what does this expression have anything to do with this expression? And if once already we're quoting the Royim Shiva, why not include the eight? What happened to the Shmoina Nisichei Adam? The one who composed this stanza, which interpretation on this page was he following? Was he following the interpretation of the Chazal? Who are the seven shepherds? David Boemza? David's in the center. Adam, Shais, and Misushelach, Miyaminoi, Avraham, Yaakov, and Moshe, Bismoiloi? Was he following the interpretation of of the first interpretation of the Malbim that we refer that it can't be, because the first interpretation already happened during the time of the Golus of the Aseres HaShvatim. Is he following what we learned in the Radak? Tein chelik l'shiva v'gam l'shmoina al tanach yodecha, and is referring to that we're going to install in the enemy nations. Either we're going to have military leaders, 15 military leaders to engage our enemies, or we're going to appoint commissioners. We're going to invade these countries and appoint leaders in the countries. 7 in this country, 8 in this country. Is that what it means? L'chore not. L'chore, it appears that the one who composed this last stanza, who seemingly is not the one who composed what it says in the Siddur, Mordechai Chazak. Okay, it says over here, he is HaMachaber Chosam Shemo Mordechai Chazak. Now that goes Mo'oz Mem, Reish, Dalet, Chof, Yod, Mordechai. Now Chazak is Chasoif Ziroya Kotcha. Chasoif is Ches, Zayin is Zayin, Ziroya, Kotchech is Kuf of Chazak. Now, it can't be that Mordechai, who composed the beginning, also composed the last stanza, because, I mean, he could. I mean, when was it composed exactly? Okay, that's the big mystery. Okay, everything is a mystery, but someone definitely wrote this. It didn't happen. Art scroll editor did not write this.
But it's undergone
revisions.
For example, sometimes it says Ro'eh Shiv. The old Siddur will say Ro'eh, which could mean something rather different. It could be a reference to David.
I say Ro'eh, don't.
Why is it a reference to David, a royal shepherd, a shepherd of 7? What would that mean?
That's who, you know, the Melech HaMashiach is. Her mom was based David. Was he the 7th son?
Yes. He was the 8th, I think.
He was the 8th. He had a younger brother, according to the song, David. He was number 7, but it was an 8th.
I thought he was the 8th. Okay, yeah. I don't know. Okay, okay.
So
I don't know.
There's something about the 7th son.
One thing it appears to be is that whoever wrote this stanza is learning pshat. If we do accept that the Roim Shiva of this stanza is a reference to what it says in our pasuk here, then obviously he is interpreting this pasuk like the second interpretation of the Malbim, a reference to Le'osid Lava. All of the Pashtonim on this page are not learning in La'asalava. They're learning this in reference, or even if they are learning in La'asalava, it doesn't fit in the theme of the Mo'asur. If you're learning about installing military leaders to go into battle, that's not the theme here. We're talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam, we want you to be the one that will obliterate the enemy. Doesn't sound like we want to go appoint officers, military leaders to go to battle for us. It doesn't seem like we're referring to commissioners to check into the books of what's going on in the countries. It doesn't seem that we're referring to the kings that already died from the time of Melech Ashur until the time of the Golus of the Bayis Rishon. It has much more of a flavor of the second interpretation of the Malbim. The second interpretation of the Malbim, what is the 7? It means the 7 nations of the world are going to come to join this major battle between Ashur and Edom. According to the second interpretation of the Malbim, we are referring here to the times of Mashiach, and Nevu and Yecheskel, where Ashur and Edom are going to battle against each other. They're going to use Yerushalayim as their battlefield, and 7 nations are going to come to watch or to participate or to assist them. That's clearly not what it's referring to in the one who composed this stanza. Establish Lanu for us. When we learned last week, we kept on going back and forth. What does it mean, the word Olav? V'hakemonu Olav. Who or what is the subject of the word Olav? Does it refer to... Oh, that's what we quoted. That quoted that. Upon us. So that was the big debate. Does it refer to the Melech HaMashiach? That the Melech HaMashiach will be granted 15 assistants? Does Allah refer to the enemy? We're going to establish upon the enemy nation there's going to be 15 commissioners or 15 generals will be appointed to deal with battle strategy against our enemies? Or does Allah, the Radak in one interpretation, means upon us? It means upon Klal Yisrael to shepherd us, to serve in what role? It's not clear. Chazal talks about Tchias HaMesim, leaders. These leaders of David, the seven and the eight, we discussed the different types of leaderships with the central authority, an even number, seven verse eight, it is someone in the center. We had that whole discussion last week. It's not at all clear. We have here a stanza in the Mosur, and it does make reference of what it says here in Micha, and he uses the word lanu. He clearly chooses to follow, as you mentioned, the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. Allah refers to us, Klal Yisrael. The shepherds of seven must mean Tchias HaMesim, or maybe it means other leaders that are coming to serve us, not necessarily assistance to the Melech HaMashiach, and certainly not assistance, not people that are going to be leaders of the Umois Ha'olam. Then it begs the question, what about the eight? Where are the Ushmoina Nisichei Adam? Why did the author of this piyut leave out the eight Nisichei Adam? Unless you want to say, is that the Hanukkah menorah with its eight candles? Okay, it's eight candles. It's eight branches. It's 8 days. The word Nisichei is also a very interesting word. What is the precise translation of a Nisichei? We translate it only one way. Everyone said it means a leader. It means a leader of people. Sarara. Nisichei Inyan Sarara. Over here, right in the Mitzvot Seals, Inyan Sarara. The Malbum doesn't even translate for us in the Perush HaMilos what the word is. But it would appear that the reason why the Malbum, the Python drew from this pasuk is it does mention eight. It does mention eight. It does mention eight in reference to the times of Mashiach, Yemos HaMashiach. And all we're missing to fill in the gap is the seven. We already have the eight. When we light Hanukkah candles...
Not only that, but the Mosul has already covered the number eight.
B'nei Vino, Yemei Shmona. B'nei Vino, 8 days, Yemei Shmona. Okay, but when we light Hanukkah candles, we all know that all of the rabbinic literature that discusses Hanukkah, it brings us to a period of Yemos HaMashiach. Everyone knows that eight represents Lamala Miderech HaTeva, seven is nature, it's the world as we know it. Eight refers to a new, improved, better world, Yemos HaMashiach. It takes us to a different time period. But in that different time period, the Pasuk tells us we're also going to have the Shiva Royim. There's going to be a tekuf of the Shmoina Nisichei Adam, the eight leaders of man, whatever that means. Hanukkah, to a degree, is the nature of the Yom Tov of Hanukkah in and of itself is taking us to the Shmoina Nisichei Adam. The only thing that is thus lacking is the Royim Shiva. So the end of the Pit of Moes Sur deliberately leaves out the Shmoina Nisichei Adam. Because Hanukkah is, to a degree, the fulfillment of the Shmoina Nisichei Adam. Because the whole nature of Hanukkah is eight. But yet, we still are lacking the Shiva Royim. The seven is still missing. Now, I'm just saying words which make no sense because we've gone through all of the mafarshim over here on the page, all the different interpretations, and we have this world famous piyut that we all say every single year, and we cannot ignore the questions that linger. What exactly? Who are the seven shepherds? We've learned many interpretations. Most of the interpretations do not make any sense in the piyut, zero sense whatsoever. And the only idea, and also the big question in the pasuk is when it says Olaf, every one of the mefarshim on the page had a different translation for the word Olaf, and here the Python clearly tells you his interpretation of the word Olaf. Lanu, upon us, upon Klal Yisrael. There's no room to deviate. Hakeim Lanu, establish Lanu for us, not for the Melech HaMashiach, not for the Umos HaOlam, not what took place back in the past. We're discussing the future, and we are discussing us. That forces us to go back and read the pasuk v'hakeimonu olav to mean the future, olav klal Yisrael, like the Targum Yonasan, and not like any of the other mefarshim. And then the question is, what about the Shmona Nesichei Adam? How come they were omitted from the piyut? And obviously, if it's Chanukah and Chanukah captures the essence of the number 8. Which is also lovely, Mosam Mashiach, it leads us to believe is that Chanukah is a window into, we're skipping over into the very, the end of days, into the future where we already have the 8. We have in front of us the Chanukah menorah, 8 candles, a commemoration of a miracle, Lamala Miderech HaTeva, with everything that 8 brings with it. So what then is missing? Well, you can't get to 8 unless you first have 7. So what we're missing to get to the true realization of Chanukah and the menorah and everything that is captured in this festival is you can't skip steps. We need number 7. We need those 7 shepherds that will get us to the 8 Nesichei Adam. And that's what's lacking, and that's why we end off with Hakeim Lanu Royim Shiva. Chanukah is a fantasy. It's a fantasy. We commemorate. So Hashem opened up a window to give us a taste, a flavor of what's going to be La'asalavo in this perfect idyllic world. But it's not. We're not yet there. We're living in Golos. There are tzaris wherever you turn. Grois tzaris. That's right. We need to get there. To get there, we can't skip. We have to beg Hashem, help us go through the steps. Hakeim Lanu, the Royim Shiva, the 7 to get us to the Shmoina Nesichei Adam. Yeah?
Just listen, look at the text. He says, V'hakeimonu Allah, Royim Shiva. He says there, V'hakeim Lanu. V'hakeimonu, he breaks it in F. Hakeim Lanu,
okay.
Hashem, Alav. Alav is Hashem. It's like we say Alav se ito, with him will be Shiv'ahu'im. Like we say in the Galim, the Alav Matei Yehuda, the Alav
Alav with.
Al is with.
With.
So Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yakim Lanu ito, with him.
With him.
Ro'im Shiv'ah. Who are the Ro'im Shiv'ah? It depends. But that's it.
So you're saying Olav is a, you want to say is that the word Vahakemonu that the Python is ignoring, is omitting the word Olav. He's just taking the word Vahakemonu, breaking up the word Hakemonu, Hakem Lanu. Hakem Lanu. Royim Shiva. Now what about the word Olav?
With him, with Mashiach.
Him, Hashem.
With
Hashem.
Established for us Hakeimonu. So you want to say better, you want to say is that since the word Olav is so controversial, there are so many interpretations as to who the word Olav refers to, does refer to Hashem, does refer to the Melech HaMashiach, does refer to us, does refer to the Umos HaOlam, so in order to avoid controversy, The Paitan left out the word Olav. He only took the word V'hakeimanu. Hakeim lanu. And Olav? No. Whatever Olav means, it means. I don't want to get involved. Don't get me involved. Just at least bring about the fulfillment of V'hakeimanu. V'hakeimanu, Royim Shiva, and the word Olav will figure it out. Okay, interesting. Interesting idea. Interesting idea.
Hakeimanu is best.
To the future. Vahakei Olav. Hakokeim Lanu. Establish for us, and we're going to omit the word Olav. It's completely left out. Just bring the Royim Shiva, whoever they may be, and the eight is Hanukkah. Okay, but the Paitanim, they're giving Paitanim, we have a great advantage, is the Paitanim, many of them were Rishonim. The Paitanim at the same level of as many of them as were Rishonim. So when they write a piyut, some of them, even Achronim, but they're giving us indirectly a perush on the Pasuk. We have over here, like someone asked me last week, which one is right? We have over here on the page, Let's say you go through the basic Mefarshim, Mekoros, Gedolos, you have 10 Perushim on one Pasuk. Who is right? That's not the question. The question is not who is right. There are another 20 interpretations that are correct. Because when these things will actually happen, they will be so rich. There are so many dimensions to reality that Elu v'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. So the question is not which one is right and which one is wrong. Not only are they all right, when Mashiach will come, we'll have another 20 more interpretations of what the Pasuk really means. Because there's so much, because reality is greater, I mean, has all that richness. Yeah, you see the depth. You see the incredible depth. You want to say that the seven shepherds are the seven Ushpizin?
Yeah.
Which movie did you see?
Another see, I say Shiva Ro'im, and say Shemuna Nesichei Adam. Doesn't say Shemuna Nesichim. Nesichei Adam is Adam.
Okay, we discussed this last week in depth, the seven shepherds and the eight Nesichei Adam. It's true that we did not discuss, you asked me a very good question, then we go into the Sukkah, he's asking a very good question, there... We have this Kabbalistic principle which comes from the Zohar of the seven Ushpizin. It's a Zohar. The Zohar says, in the Sukkah, we have seven guests. Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov. And most of us read Moshe, the Aaron, Yosef, and David. Now, that's not in chronological order. Yosef was born before Moshe, the Aaron. And indeed, there are some versions that put Yosef first. Now,
yeah, but then if you're going in chronological order, why is it Aaron and Moshe?
Oh, yes, a very good question. Aaron was old. I never thought about that. Very good. Excellent.
Okay.
Very good. So maybe the difference is that a year, 3 years, that's something that's not so significant.
No, but can we say also that the Shiva Nesichim are first. Shmaina, the eighth one... Vakimaini, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make the eighth one, and we could say that's Mashiach.
Yeah.
So therefore, Hakeim Lanu Raya Shiva, bring the Raya Shiva, and with that Mashiach will come, who will be the eighth.
So you want to say another interpretation is that it's not 15. We until now, most of the Talmudics, and what Rabbi Kahal is saying, we until now, life
seven
is...
Seven plus one.
We want to say that it's a total of 15. It's seven plus one. Tain Chelik, like that's the most Mepharshim. Right, it's 7 plus 1. It's the 8th. So, by the way, who is the Ushpizin? Who is the Ushpizin of Shmini Atzeres? No, that's Hashanah Rabbah. Shlomo HaMelech. All the Chassidish Asar. He's 8. HaMelech Shahasholim Shaloyeh. Yeah, that's the Haftorah. On Shmini Atzeres, what is the Haftorah? Vahi Bayoim Hashmin Vayishilach Esa'am. He sent away the people and he blessed the people. Shmini Atzeres is the eighth Ushpizin is Shloimei HaMelech, and that Shloimei refers to HaMelech Shehasholoim HaMelech Shehasholoim Sheloi. So that's another approach. We have the seven shepherds and the eight Nesichei Adam which, okay, I don't know how you're going to fit all this in with Adam and shepherds, but there's another, definitely there another, another.
And
by the seven Hakotas, and that you say, and Hashanah Rabbah,
yeah.
Those that go further into Kabbalah, they'll say each one of the Hakotas will be Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. When they come to David, which is the last one, they will say Rachmana Itkalan Kayama the David Malka, and then they'll say the second one Rachmana Itkalan Kayama the Shloima.
That's eight.
Yeah.
Right. Eight is Shlomo. That's clear. Eight is Shlomo. So then it will be the eighth one will be the Melech HaMashiach.
And also if they kafar of the Yosef, they say Pinchas.
Pinchas. It's another version. It's true. There's another version.
Aaron, they'll say Pinchas.
Instead,
Yosef.
Okay. So this is all very interesting. Who are the seven shepherds? It's interesting that none of the commentators, at least over here, make any mention this idea of this of the Ushpizin that come into the Sukkot purely from the Zohar. And the Rishonim, which did not really touch upon the Zohar, the Rishonim did not know from the Zohar, it appears, to at least not publicly, they do not make any mention of the seven shepherds being, like we say, Aaron, Yisrael, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, Yosef, and David. They don't mention, which is interesting. Okay, but okay. So again, there are a lot more questions and answers. We did though succeed at least in going through some interesting ideas about that. There's only 5 minutes left. Let me just conclude with one thing about the Ushpiza, which maybe will shed a little bit of light. Because anyway, it's not worthy to go further. But we have 5 minutes, and that is why. What is the difference between the Ushpizin if we say first Yosef verse saying Aaron u'Moshe? What is the difference? It was, where do we put Yosef? Is Yosef put at the end, which we do, that's what we do, or should Yosef be put in order of birth? In other words, what most of us, when we recite the Ushpizin, if we do, it's Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, then is Moshe, then is Aaron, then is Yosef, and then is David. The other version is Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Yosef, then Moshe, Aaron, and David. What is the difference? The difference is, when we discuss Yosef and David, are we discussing the biblical man Yosef and the biblical man David? Or are we describing Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David? When we, our order lends itself much more to the interpretation that Yosef at the end is not necessarily Yosef the man. Yosef in Chumash, what he represents. Mashiach ben Yosef. And thus David doesn't mean David the man, it means Mashiach ben David. Now, in that interpretation, there's no room left for Shlomo, because David took the cake. In other words, according to our interpretation, you're done, you're finished. According to our interpretation, look, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, they're the Avos. They establish Emunah. Then comes Torah. Who's the Torah? Moshe V'Aaron. Moshe V'Aaron with the Manhigim. Yadus is always before Matan Torah, the Avos. We are a product of the Avos and of Matan Torah. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe V'Aaron. Now, we're working from after the point of Yitzias, after the point of settling Eretz Yisrael. Everything is a process of Bias HaMashiach, which includes the political goal, the political development of Mashiach, which is Yosef, Mashiach ben Yosef, which is a process that spans 2,000 years. And then the arrival of the spiritual Mashiach, Mashiach ben David. When David comes, it's over. There's nothing more to do. But if you learn that Yosef is the man, and it's a whole different approach to Sukkot, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. After Yaakov, there's a fourth Av. Yosef, there's a lot of Chidushei Torah. Yosef HaTzadik, Rav Hud is very big into this. That Yosef HaTzadik, to a degree, is also one of our forefathers. He established certain principles of emunah, just like Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. Each one established a principle, a pillar of faith. In their, each is unique. Not for now, all the details. Yosef has also established, probably Maral talks about these type of things, or Michal, you familiar with this, or Kalbach, also has established a principle of faith. Then comes Moshe, and Aaron, Torah, and then comes David HaMelech, who established Malchus, authority in Klal Yisrael. We are discussing the man David. The man David established in Klal Yisrael authority. Then we're not finished yet. Because that Oshana Rabbah only takes us to the world as we know it. What about Mashiach? Mashiach, what about that? That you need to come on to a Shmini Atzeres. Shmini Atzeres, which is Shlomo HaMelech, which alludes to HaMelech Shahasholoim Sheloi, the ultimate goal of Mashiach. So what is Shmini Atzeres? Well, that's the dual nature. Mitzad Echad Shmini Atzeres, a Yomtev Bifnei Atzmo, has absolutely nothing to do with the 7 days of Sukkot. Mitzad Sheni, Shmini Atzeres is the conclusion of Sukkot. It is number 8. It's not day number 1, it's number 8. The difference if Shmini Atzeres is a Yomtev Bifnei Atzmoi, or Shmini Atzeres is the natural conclusion of Sukkot, relates, parallels with what exactly are the order of the Ushpizin. Are the Ushpizin Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, then Yosef and David? So Yosef would then be Mashiach ben Yosef. David is Mashiach ben David. Shmini Atzeres, Yomtif Bifnei Atzmoi, has absolutely nothing to do with Sukkot. It's a Yomtif Bifnei Atzmo. Finished. Make a Shechyanu. No connection. Mashiach already came. David already came. Mashiach already came on Hashanah Rabbah. But if you learn that, no, it's Shmini. It's day 8. It's not independent. Then you have to change the Ushpizin. Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and Yosef. Those are the others. Moshe v'Aaron. David contributed Malchus. But we still need a Mashiach. And Mashiach is going to be Shmini. Shmini is Shlomo HaMelech. That is the culmination. That is the culmination. Now, when you take those ideas, so Shmini, and you want
so
to
that
put...
that, in a way, should also be... one Nusach should be to Chutz Laretz, which Shmini is the extension of Pesach, because the Speke de Yayma, and the
Sukkot, yeah.
And Eretz Yisrael should be the other
independent. One. So you want to say it's totally in Chutz Laretz and in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. But also can relate to that idea, you want to inject it into the Mosor. In this pasuk here as well, we have over here Hak v'Hakim Bainu Lav Shiva Roim Ushmoin Nesichi Adam. What exactly is the relationship between the 7 and the 8? And then we come to the Mosur Hakim Lanu Roim Shiva. We stop here. We stop with the number 7. We don't go into 8. I mean, but there is an 8, obviously. Okay, I don't know this. We have this something to think about. I don't know the answer, but it's obviously, Baruch Hashem, we did discuss a lot of different ideas, and tomorrow we will move forward.
The connection with Shev, with David, is not.